Now I get the privilege of introducing tonight's speaker. And I had the privilege of meeting her some time ago. How long was it?
Yeah, around up in the valley.
Yeah. We met in Fresno. She has some history in Visalia. I'm sure you'll get to hear a little bit about that. But please do offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Sheila.
I'm an alcoholic. I wasn't nervous until they said, "We're going to be recording you." And then I was like, "That stinks. I don't want to be recorded." But that's okay. I'll let you. I said yes. I'm really happy to be here and be of service. Welcome to the newcomers. I hope you find something here that keeps you coming back. Somebody gave me some really good advice when I was outside. He said, "Just tell the truth." And my sponsor would have said the same thing when she got here, but, you know, he beat her to it this time. So thanks. I will do my best to tell the truth. I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope, and hopefully I'll get sober. It's been a while since I've spoken, so bear with me. I started out as a child. We moved a lot. We started when I was in the first grade. After kindergarten, my parents started moving. And between the first and fourth grade, I moved about 16 times into a bunch of different schools. And so I got to learn how to change and do things different than other people. And as a result of that, and something I hear here all the time, I didn't really feel like I fit in. I was different than everybody else and didn't really identify with people and thought I was weird. Then I got into, you know, primary grades and junior high and, of course, got picked on and teased and all that good stuff that happens when you're young and silly. And then I found the church, and I ended up being in church from, really what happened was I started having a lot of nightmares when I was about 12, and it kept me up at night. And my mom was really strong in church when she was younger, so she said, "Well, that's what we'll do. We'll go to church." And so I was there from 12 to about 23, and I was what they call on fire. So I was doing ministry and missions and all that sort of thing. Pretty solid foundation as far as God is concerned. And then I ended up thinking I was going to be a missionary. So I went to Bible college, and somewhere in there, things went a little weird. By the end of my senior year in college, I decided that God was not doing for me what I needed. I did not have an MRS degree, which is a Mrs. degree. I didn't get married. They promised me that when I went to Bible college, I would come out married, and I did not. And I was pissed about it. So I told God I didn't know what he was doing, and I was going to go ahead and do things my own way. On my graduation day was my first drunk. I went with my dad, my Aunt Pam, my Aunt Betty, and my two cousins, and we went to this place called the Goat Hill Tavern in Costa Mesa. There they have sawdust on the floor and peanuts. And they proceeded to give me Jägermeister shots, beer, wine. Gosh, there were so many things. I can't even remember all of them. And I also did start smoking then, too, because that was pretty cool. When you're drunk and smoking, you feel like a rock star, especially in, like, Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area. So I was really happy. That was a really fun. It was about 2 hours that we were drinking, and I got really, really hammered. So basically started out a drunk right from the beginning. On my way home from that place, 2 hours later, I was vomiting all over Fairview Drive, which is in Costa Mesa, and that was my first drunk. And I walked into the house where my new roommates were setting up furniture, and their pastor dad was helping them. And I was really drunk, and I'm sorry, the F word is part of my story. The first thing I said was, "I'm fucking drunk," to my roommate's pastor dad. It was awesome. So my dad deposited me in the bathroom and built my bed for me and left because they lived in Fresno. So I was, you know, moving into this place in Costa Mesa. But when I woke up the next morning, you would think that this was something that, you know, you wouldn't ever want to do again. And I did have a hangover, but what I did know is I loved that feeling. That feeling that I felt that night when all of my worries and fears left. And they were gone. And I didn't care that I wasn't married. I mean, I did care that I wasn't married. I really wanted to be married. But I didn't care at that time. And I forgot a lot of things. So I basically got drunk as much as I could after that. I started messing up on my job, and I didn't realize any of that was happening until I got here. So all this is kind of, you're getting a little bit of hindsight with the story. But when I was there, I knew where every happy hour special was, like really quickly. It only took me like a month to acclimate to this. I knew where every happy hour special was. I knew where Disco Night was and the dollar shops. I knew where Margarita Monday was, because that's really, I love margaritas. I knew where every place I could go. And I thought this whole time that all of my friends were going with me to these places. I thought we were always, you know, getting drunk together. As I looked back on it once I got sober, I realized that I was with different groups of friends every time. Not everybody was following me around like this. I mean, there was one or two others, but not everybody was doing it. What I also didn't realize is that I was bumming rides off of people. I drove drunk one time, and on the way home, I was going, but then I remember, should say that. On the way home, I was white-knuckling it, and I remember thinking, I'm never doing this again. If I get home, I will never drive drunk again. I didn't say I would never get drunk again. I said I'd never drive drunk again. And I didn't. I used my friends up. I, you know, would charm people into getting me rides home, or I'd find a cab, which didn't really happen very often because I always manipulated my way into a ride. And that was my early drinking. So that was the fun times, the dancing, the partying, all the good stuff. And then, you know, we were out of college now. People started getting married and moving away, if they hadn't already gotten married and moved away. Started having families. It was harder and harder to find people to drink with. But I was managed to do it, and I started relocating at this point. I moved down to Torrance, California, and I worked really hard, a lot of overtime, and partied really hard. And I didn't realize I was becoming a drunk. In about 2001, I got a job as a nanny in New York. And this was a great opportunity. My life felt really empty. I really wanted to get out of LA, and I loved the idea of going to New York. So I packed my bags, quit my job, and moved in 3 days. And to be a nanny, so I had to quit smoking on my way, and I had to quit drinking on my way. By the time I got there, I was smoke-free and drink-free. Yes. And that lasted, the first week I got really sick, and I couldn't figure out why. I was like, why am I so sick? I told my cousin, oh, it must be the air here, because I hadn't had any drinks. but you know what? It was enough. I had enough of a high from relocating that I didn't really notice that I hadn't been drinking that much until 9/11 happened. And that kind of put me in a tailspin as well as the rest of New York. I mean, obviously, it's not just about me in this case. But I ended up working for a family down the road who had lost their dad, and there were 5 kids and one on the way. And I had worked for another family that had 3 girls, so this time I had about 6 children that I was responsible for. Really great to be, you know, a responsible drunk. So how I managed my life at that point was I did start drinking really heavily because I felt I deserved it. I was stressed out at work. Those kids were, you know, emotional, to say the least. One of the 3-year-olds, just to give you an idea of some of the things I dealt with, and this is not a poor me. Alcohol is the way I knew how to deal with things at this point because I had given up on God. But one of the things that had happened is I was cleaning the house one day, and the little 3-year-old usually got up about 10 o'clock. So at around 11, he still hadn't surfaced, and I didn't understand where he was, so I went up to the bedroom to find him, and he wasn't there. So, of course, I panicked, and I started searching all over the house for him. And I found him in the basement underneath the pool table, and he was rocking and asking for his dad. And that was really rough. I didn't like that. I didn't like seeing that. So, you know, those types of things helped drive me back to the bottle where I knew I could get some relief. So at night, I was drinking till I passed out or till I decided to wet myself, whichever came first, and sometimes they coincided. And I was waking up and taking diet pills in the morning so I could make it through the day. And that's basically how my life was going in New York. As things were starting to steamroll into chaos, because one of the people I worked for was also having dependency issues, but on the pill end, as things started snowballing into chaos, my sister in Southern California got pregnant. And she called me and she's like, I'm pregnant, I need help. And I was like, yes, I'm out of here. I didn't really say that. I was like, oh no, she's pregnant, I guess I should go help her. Because I was, you know, so responsible and knew all about kids. Never mind the drinking and driving and you know, being hungover at work, never mind all that. I'm responsible and I can take care of kids. So I decided to hightail it back home. On my way home, I hit Wyoming, where I went to what I call adult summer camp for 3 months. I lived at the base of the Grand Tetons in Jenny Lake, or no, it's the Grand Teton National Forest, yeah. I got nervous, sorry. The Grand Teton National Forest. I lived at the base of that. Gorgeous, gorgeous place to live. I was a server, but I had been in a really stressful situation. I was really, really emotional, so I thought, I get to play and party now. I have no responsibilities. All I have to do is serve food to people and then, you know, do whatever I want. So I remember about 3 weeks of living there for 3 months. That was really fun because I started dating my boss, and I highly recommend doing that if you're drinking. You should always date your boss. That's really sarcastic, just so you know. So I was in the middle of this alcohol-laden time, and I was drinking a ton all the time, and I was wetting the bed all the time, and you know, people that you date don't necessarily like waking up wet in the morning. I'm just throwing that out there. So I was really, I was constantly apologizing and cleaning the bed, but he was pretty much a drunk like me, so he didn't really throw me out, which most people probably would have, but he didn't, so that was great. So we got along really well until I left, and then I decided that he put alcohol first and not me, and that wasn't very nice of him, so I had to break up with him once we left, because he wanted to party all the time and he didn't want to spend time with me once we weren't living there anymore. So, you know, gotta get rid of that guy. So I get to Fresno, and this is where it starts getting really out of control. I've now spent 3 months in Wyoming drinking like a crazy person and not remembering a lot. And it really was out of control. I had no idea that that was happening. There was a time there that I went on a canoe ride with two other people, a man in front of me and a man in back of me. And the man in back was mixing me Captain Morgan and Coke. And the man in front was taking pictures, like really nice taking pictures. I blacked out on that trip. All I remember is waking up soaking wet in my cabin and listening to the man who was giving me the drinks talk about how the boat capsized several times and what the last time he had to pull me up by my hair to rescue me, which I thought was fantastic. I wasn't embarrassed at all. I was ready to run out there and go, it was me! No, I was mortified. I was humiliated and I was incredibly sad that that had happened, and I heard him telling the story and everybody laughing, and that wasn't very fun. So when I finally surfaced, my boss boyfriend looked at me kind of in shame, you know, because no one wants to be at the camp drunk, but he still took pity on me, still, you know, kept me as his girlfriend. And the next morning, when he saw how black and blue I was from the rocks of the Snake River, he gave me a Valium to help me feel better. So that was really nice of him. So anyway, that was the type of thing that was going on when I was in Wyoming, the type of humiliating stuff I was doing in front of everybody and not really caring. At least, well, that's not true. I cared, and so I drank more. Anyway, when I got home, I was out of control, and I was at my sister's house. I'm here to help her with her baby, remember? And she's now, I think she's about 7 months pregnant at the time, and my dad had moved in with her. Well, my dad and I don't get along very well, so I didn't really want to stay. And one night, we had a little party, and I drank way too much, and I ended up doing what I always did, wet the bed, in this case, the couch. And my dad came down, and he was like, you couldn't rouse yourself to go to the restroom in the restroom? And he had this look of pity and shame and embarrassment on his face. And I was, that hit me hard. That struck. And I reacted in a, you know, a very humble way. I cleaned the couch and then I immediately moved out and was like, I can't believe that you got mad at me for that. And I left and I moved in with some roommates. But I also swore, this is the first time I swore off drinking. And I said, I will never drink hard alcohol again. I will never drink hard alcohol again. I will only drink beer and wine. And so my dad was okay with that. He's like, okay, let's see if you can do that. And so I did. And beer and wine, this is the same story. I didn't wet the bed as much, but I really did taper down a little. It wasn't long before I started right back where I was. And at this point, I started breaking off from my family. I started distancing myself, not calling. I remember one time my sister had called me like several times on my cell phone and I didn't answer. And then finally, it was like the sixth time I finally picked up the phone. I was passed out on the couch. You know, I was fine. I was passed out on the couch. So I finally answered and she goes, "Dad's on his way to check on you. I thought you were dead." And I didn't think I was hurting anybody. You know, I had no idea that they were worried. Again, this is something, when that happened, I was really nonchalant about it. I was like, okay, whatever, I'm fine. I was asleep on the couch. But when I look back at it now, I realize what I was doing. So you're getting a little, like I said, back and forth. But those are the types of things I was doing in my drinking, and I didn't think I was hurting anybody. I thought the only person that was suffering from this was me. So at this point, I'm still able to work. People are still hiring me. Not everybody understands that I'm a drunk. And so I was working for a management company. Coincidentally, they moved their managers a lot. So they didn't really realize I was drinking a lot because they would move us all the time. So I moved several different times with that company. And once in a while, a maintenance man would say something, like he'd come to my door and wonder why I didn't answer when he needed to get a key and he needed me to go to the office. But no one really said anything about it. But the final straw there at that company was that I was talking to my boss, whom I did not like very much, at one of these apartment complexes, and I was drunk. And halfway through the conversation, I blacked out. Well, when I went to bed that night, and I say that term loosely, when I passed out that night, I had a dream that I called her a big bitch and told her to her face what I thought of her, which was not very nice, and quit my job. When I woke up in the morning, or came to, however you want to say it, I thought it happened. I thought that had happened. I thought I quit my job. I thought I talked to my boss and said all of those nasty things to her. And I was freaked out, to say the least. So I called my dad. Incidentally, I always called my dad when I was in trouble, which I'm sure he loved. I called him and I let him know, "Dad, I've been drinking. I think this is what happened last night. I may be losing my job today, so I'll probably be coming home if that's okay. But guess what? I'm going to stop drinking." Last night, I was researching on the internet and I found this solution. It's called Rational Recovery. And basically, all I have to do is imagine that my monster, or my drinking, is a big green monster, and just stay away from the big green monster and I'll be okay. And so that's what I told my dad I was doing. And he was relieved. He's like, "Oh, good. I'm glad you're stopping drinking. It's about time. You really need to." And he, you know, was really happy about it. So I went into work that day, and I hadn't quit my job. And it was awesome. I was like, "Oh, they don't know that I think she's a bitch. Yay! So I get to stay." But I realized now, I've decided that I have a problem with drinking. And so I'm going to try to stay sober. So for 2 months or so at that job, I stayed sober and decided I had to leave. I had to leave Laguna Niguel. I had to get out of there. That job was the problem. The area was the problem. It was just too easy to party. I got to go. So I moved back to Visalia. I got a job here at the retirement community over there on Acres. And I'm going to manage that retirement community. I'm going to be great, and I'm going to be sober. So I did for about, I guess it was about 2-3 months. I'm not going to say that that is the absolute truth, because I was a drunk and still am an alcoholic, and I tend to distort time. So it may have been shorter than 3 months. It might have been a little longer, but I'm not sure. So I'm going to stick with 3 months. But I was sober, and I was able to start working that park. And then one night, I went to dinner with my family, because they lived here also, and so I went to dinner with them at their house, and my dad says, "You know, you're doing really great. You could probably drink wine. Just drink with us. Don't drink outside of here." And I was like, "Oh, that sounds like a good idea, because I like wine, and I think I can handle it. You know, I've been sober 3 months. So, yeah, okay, I'll just drink with you guys." So the first night that I drank with them, I had 2 glasses of wine and was able to maintain at the house. As soon as I left, I stopped at the store and bought a bottle of Captain and a Diet Coke and proceeded to finish, because two drinks just wasn't enough for me. I don't know how anybody can only drink two drinks. And it never was. I've never been a two-drink person. Even if I said, I'm going to have two drinks, it was never like that. So that's what happened. I was back on a roll. I was drinking every night. I was going to, I think it was four different stores here in town because it's a small town, and I knew everybody knew me. And they were all going to know that I was a drunk. So I'd go to, you know, the different ones all around. I went to Rite Aid. I'd look at the ads to see who had the cheapest captain. And then at the end of the month, it was, you know, Bacardi or whatever was really, really cheap. And that's what I did. And I lived like that for a while. And then I decided, I was about 34 at this point, and I decided I needed to get married. I had to get back on track, you know. Here I am now, I'm 34. I wanted to be married at 23. So I got to get rolling on this. So I started going on MySpace and Craigslist, and I met a lot of really nice guys. It was great. And I was dating a couple of guys. It was funny, three of them drank like me and three of them didn't drink at all. And it was just the weirdest mix of people. But I ended up going out on this one date with a man in Fresno, and I met him there and we went for coffee. And he was like all sparkly and shiny, and he had this like glow in his eye, and he was able to like string sentences together and was really smart, in my opinion. And I was, you know, talking to him, and I was just like, wow, you just seem like you have a lot of hope. You seem like you know, you have a really great spirit, you know, those things you say to people. And he said, well, you know, I've been sober been straight or something for 3 years now. And I was like, oh, that's cool. He goes, my cousin told me I should go to AA sometime. And he said, well, maybe you should. And I didn't tell him all, you know, of the drinking that I did, but he left an impression. Anyway, about a week later, we're still texting each other, and one night I was driving down the 198, and the moon was really full and beautiful and, like, pretty close. And so I texted him when I got home that, did you see the moon tonight? Isn't it beautiful? And I was sober. Well, as sober as I could be at the time. I was sober when I got home. And then around 11, after I'd had probably half a bottle of Captain, he hadn't responded yet. And I was like, how rude, like he's ignoring me. So, you know, I sent him a nasty text because this was something that I did a lot. I sent him a nasty text like, I can't believe you'd ignore me, Steve. This is why I don't date, da, 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 da. And I was, you know, drunk and didn't realize I did it until the morning when I looked at my phone and went, oh, no, he's going to know I'm an alcoholic. And then I knew that I was an alcoholic. And that was when I had my, I guess people call it a moment of clarity, but that's when it just, like, finally, after all the hurt I'd caused people, after all the pain that they had gone through, I finally had a dagger in my heart. This guy, who was really hot and shiny, he's going to know I'm an alcoholic, and I can't hide anymore. And I really like him. So I can't date him anymore. That was what happened. I realized I was alcoholic, and I sent him an email, because I'm not going to call you when I'm being honest and sincere. And I said, you know, I realized I'm an alcoholic, and that text I sent you was really rude, and I apologize for that, and I'm going to go to AA tomorrow. And I said tomorrow, I said I couldn't find meetings, but the truth was I still had about this much Captain, and I didn't want to go to with the Captain. You know, I wanted to finish him. I didn't want to waste him. So I told him that I'd go to a meeting the next day, and I wouldn't be able to date him because I knew, I don't know how I knew this, but I knew that if you join AA, join the club or the group or whatever it was at that time for me, I knew that if you joined it, you couldn't date for a year. I knew that. I don't know how. I guess it was TV. But I knew that. So the next, well, 2 days later, I guess that evening, I walked into the Breath of Fresh Air group, and I met Carol and another very nice lady and a man named Greg, and I think Rick was there. I think you were there. And Carol walked up to me, she said, you're the most important person in the room. And I was like, oh no, I'm definitely in the wrong place. I didn't say it out loud, but that's when my heart dropped. And I was really scared. I didn't want to be important anywhere. I just wanted to not feel miserable. And I knew this was where I was going to go to learn how to be sober. And one of the other things that she said and did was she gave me her number and said I should call, and the other lady did the same. And the next day, so this is how desperate I am, right? Because I need the shiny guy. The next day, I called, and I was like, okay, I need to meet you somewhere. I was going crazy. And I was, because it was my first day, like full day without a drink, and it was crazy. It's like, wow, my brain is spinning, and I don't know what to do, and I can't sit down. So, and I did forget to tell you, like, part of the issue getting here, I did go see a therapist at one point, because I had this this man that I had dated. This was probably a year before I got here. I dated him, and he moved back into Visalia, moved back into town with me, and he was a rough character. Not in the sense that he was abusive or anything. He'd been in jail. He was like, I romanticized this guy. Oh, he's been in jail for all the right reasons. He was defending the one he loved. La 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 la. So this is the man that I was dating, and he was a very nice man. I'm not trying to, you know, diss him or anything, but while he was living with me, he decided that I was not the one for him, and he left me and moved to L.A. and took all his stuff. Well, he didn't take all his stuff. I threatened to throw that stuff in the river because it was important to him. So he took all his stuff, and I, at this point, was 32, I think. It was right before I decided, okay, I can go get a husband. But I lost it. Like, for a full day, I couldn't stop crying. I could not stop crying, and I knew that no one was ever going to love me. I was never going to have any kids. I mean, I went to the ultimate pity party. So I ended up at this therapist, hyperventilating, and he's like, what's wrong? I said, he left me. And the guy didn't know what I was talking about, but he gave me the suicide threat assessment thing and had me fill out all this information. And by the time I was done filling that out, like, I was still crying a little, but I was able to calm down. So he pulled me into his office, and we had a meeting, and he asked me all the standard questions, how much do you drink, yada, yada. And, of course, I lied about all of that because no one needs to know how much I really drink. But he did make a lot of sense, so I tried to drink a little less when I saw him. It's really, really crazy when you think about it, right? The insanity. So anyway, I saw him for about a year, and while I was seeing him, he told me that I probably should get a different job, that what I was doing wasn't, you know, my calling. So I did start going back to school in a master's program, and it was about 3 months into that I realized I had a problem. So that's kind of why I went back. Incidentally, that guy, the one who left me, ended up robbing a bank in Colorado, and so now he's in jail. So that's the kind of taste I have when I'm drinking. Anyway, the therapist kind of talked me into going back to school, so I started that. And, you know, honestly, I never would have finished. I never would have finished school if I would have kept on the track that I was on. But, like I said, I went to the Breath of Fresh Air group, and I met Carol, and I called her, and that was a miracle. And I even said that to Rick, like, we're miracles in here. If you're here and you have even 30 days of sobriety, if you're a drinker like I was, that's a miracle. Because it's hard to get 30 days in here, you know. And my sobriety date now is January 23rd, 2008. So I am at 5.5 years of continuous sobriety. Thank you. So to me that's a miracle. And you ladies who just got here today and are here for 14 days, you know, keep coming back. It does get better. So Carol started me on the steps, and it's funny, Rick said that they chased me out of town, but the fact was I was working at that retirement community, and all those people were driving me crazy. It was their fault. So I had to get out of here. No, what happened was I needed to change, and I don't recommend doing that. They say you should stay put your first year. If you're in a relationship, stay in it. If you're not in a relationship, don't get in one. For your first year, try not to make any major changes, because it's a roller coaster ride. Obviously, I didn't choose to do things that way, but when I did leave here, I got some really great advice, and that was get plugged in quick. Don't wait around. And that's what I did. And I got plugged in with a group called the Trudges. They were very structured, which means, you know, kind of hit you on the head with a hammer. Structured, very honest, which is really hard for a sensitive person like me to hear. You know, like, "That was a lie, Sheila. You withheld information. That was a lie." I'm like, "How is that a lie? I don't understand." And I still get that way because, you know, at that group, they consider you a newcomer until you're 5 years old. So I just barely stopped being a newcomer in that group. And then the main lady, not the main lady, but the one with 40 years goes, "Yeah, we're going to change that to 10 years. So they like to, what do we call it? Ego smashing? They like to smash your ego and keep you right size. But they do it with love most of the time. No, but, you know, I worked the first 3 steps with Carol, and I was honest as I could be at that point, and I did it with my full desperation. Like, I need to get better because I am sick of hurting people. And after about 3 months of being here, right before I left, I started realizing how much I hurt people. I had no idea. You know, I really thought that no one was hurt but me because I'm the one doing it. You guys don't care. I had no idea that I didn't call my parents. Like, they had no idea where I was in Wyoming. For 3 months, they didn't hear from me. They had no idea what was going on. And that's pretty unnerving. I can't imagine that. I have a nephew who's 10, and he was actually his fifth birthday was 2 days after my sobriety day. He's 10 years old. I cannot imagine not knowing where he is for, like, 2 days. If I didn't know where he was, I would be hunting for him. And I don't know that that's going to go away, but it just breaks my heart that I did that to my family. So as I stayed, I worked the first 3 steps with Carol. I moved, and then I got another sponsor very quickly, and we started in on the steps right away. And I worked the first 12 steps within a year, I believe. I might have finished right after my year. And in that time, I was able to make amends to my family. I was able to have, like, a normal conversation with my dad without, like, psychoanalyzing him, which, by the way, was something I loved to do. I loved to tell him how he was, you know, wrong in almost every aspect of my life when I was a kid. And now I'm able to accept my dad for who he is and how he is and realize that I'm a jerk, and most of the time he's reacting to the way I treat him. And that's a really big thing for me to learn. I mean, it's been 5 years and I'm just now starting to become an adult. So things that have happened since I got sober, I finished my degree, and I actually started my first job in that field this last Tuesday. I moved to Taft, and I have started seeing, you know, going to meetings there, and I've been talking to my sponsor on a regular basis to deal with that move, and I love that job. I guess it was in April, I got engaged. I'm almost 40, so my timeline was very different from what God had for me. But I got engaged to a really amazing man who loves me for who I am and who I love for who he is, and that took some time because I did not accept him right away, let me tell you. I don't know about you guys, but I like to try to change people. So that, I've been working the steps on that too, but he's an amazing man, and I don't know, it really is as a result of these steps and of meeting people and of growing up and realizing that the whole world does not revolve around me, and I can continue to make excuses for why I drank, and I can continue to tell you the psychoanalytic reasons behind my drinking and my low self-esteem and my poor me attitude. When it all comes down to it, I have a problem with perception. I see things differently than other people, and I have a problem with arrogance. I love me, and I think I'm awesome in every way. And so if I try to judge others by what I feel or what I see, I end up really selling people short. And I don't know if I'm making a whole lot of sense, but I will tell you now, I am able to live my life without running the world, and some days it's harder than others. But that's why I go to the meetings. And I go to, you know, my sponsor has this thing where we do commitment meetings. And she told me I needed to go to 5 meetings a week when I first got here. And that seemed like a lot, you know, 5 meetings a week. And she didn't tell me it was going to end. She's like, "You're going to go to 5 meetings a week. And I was like, "But okay, so till when?" And she didn't give me a deadline. So I was apparently supposed to do that for a long time. But I had 5 commitment meetings, and because I had those, I got to see the same people over and over, and I got to establish accountability, and I got to make some really good contact with people who really wanted to be sober like me. And doing those steps and taking those suggestions is what kept me here and what kept me sober. And And today, like I said, I don't do it perfectly. I don't. But I do call my sponsor when I get nuts, and I call her when I'm not nuts. And she'll tell me when she catches me in a lie, and she'll tell me what I need to do to keep my sobriety. And to me today, that is the most important thing, because, like I said, without it, I wouldn't have this amazing job that I just got. I wouldn't have the amazing man that I just got. And I really wouldn't have the peace of mind that I have most days. It's not great, like, you know, it's flittering, but it's good. I'm growing every day, and I really thank you guys for being here and thanking me. Thank you for allowing me to be of service.